Hello and welcome to Tigers by the Fire, a podcast out of Holy Cross High School about World War II discussions and stories. This is episode 4 of season 3, and this is the Winter War. With me are Colin Bourgeois and Brody Calamus.
I'm Brody Calamus.
I'm Colin Bourgeois.
Today's topic is going to be the Winter War, a war between the Soviet Union and Finland. And a lot of people, I feel like, don't know much about this, so it's an interesting topic that you guys chose. And if you could kind of elaborate on that, why did you guys this, or how did you come to discovering this topic?
So initially, we had heard a lot about the sniper units on the Finnish side. So that's how we kind of got into this. We thought those were interesting. And then reading a lot more into the actual war, we kind of learned how important it was to the Soviet strategy leading up into World War II and actually in World War II, Operation Barbarossa. And then with the Finnish side, they had so many less troops and they were so much smaller compared to the Soviet Union. It's remarkable the things they were able to accomplish with their size.
I really like the Finnish sniper troops in this war. I feel like they played a huge part, especially since, we'll get into that in a little bit, but they were really good at camouflage, concealing their positions, and they were really good at picking off Soviet soldiers.
Yeah, obviously being called the Winter War, part of that's going to be fought in the snow. And like you said, the Finns will be, I think, known after this as a highly mobile, and like you said, they're really good at using the snow and the surrounding areas to conceal their positions, and it's something the Russians had to deal with. And I think eventually it's something the Russians will be using themselves in World War II. So I think that's a pretty good starting off point. So let's start off. How did this whole thing kind of start?
All right. So in order to kind of understand the Finnish side of the war, you have to understand what happened pre-war. So about in 1918 to 1920, when the Bolsheviks took over Russia, you had the Finnish parliament claiming absolute control and absolute authority of Finland. They were trying to take power, and because the Bolsheviks were trying to fight in 1918, 1920, they were trying to take over Russia, they really didn't have time to deal with this. So they kind of let this happen. So this is, you're talking about 19 years before the war. Finland's very new. They are very, very patriotic and very noble people. They don't want to be taken over by Russia again. They want to be their own nation. They want to rule their own nation. So going into 1939, you have the Finnish not wanting to be taken over. So in 1929, we have the Lapland Party, which is the fascist parties in Finland. This was started largely due to the economic depression that was kind of just hitting Finland, which led to fascism, also led to a communist party leading up. This Lapland Party really didn't have much power. And by about 1932, the party had no power. They had no authority. Everyone was kind of against them because they tried to stage a coup, and they actually kidnapped the president, K.J. Stahlberg. Very unpopular decision by them. So by about 1932, they were out of power. But Stalin's had still feared by this time that his fear was fascist and Nazi Germany. He wasn't worried about Anglo-France forces anymore. He was completely worried about Nazi Germany and fascists. So Russia and Stalin went into negotiations in April of 1939. They attempted to negotiate a swap in territory. Russia wanted to gain some territory that Finland had, some islands in the Baltic Sea. But the Finnish they weren't budging. They wanted to keep these lands for themselves. So by about by November 9th, they were in their last negotiation. It wasn't working, and Finland and Russia both knew that a war was going to break out. They didn't know when. So by this point, Finland and Russia had been both mobilizing their troops. So then you get to November 9th when actually the war started. November 9th, 1939, 9:20 a.m., Russian planes flew over Helsinki. Helsinki is the capital of Finland. And they actually, the first thing they did was drop leaflet bombs. So like they did propaganda bombing, trying to convince the Finnish people to overthrow their government and stage a coup. But the Finnish people didn't want to overthrow their government. Like I said, they were a very proud people because, if I mean, no government, no people that had just become free about 20 years ago is going to want to let another foreign power take them again, the same foreign power that already taken them over. So they're not going to stage a coup. They're going to want to fight for their land. So there's a large, surprising Soviet offensive. They push right in. They cross what's known as the Karelian Isthmus, which is the border lands between Russia and Finland. They bomb right. They rush right through, start bombing Helsinki. Not as bad as, you know, bombings in Britain, in the Battle of Britain or anything, but there were a few civilian bombings throughout the war. So that's the beginning of the war. Do you want to go into how the Finnish and Russians fought, like in the...
Yeah, well, I was going to, and we'll get to Colin's part with the fighting of the war. I think it's interesting because oftentimes, you know, when you look at World War II or you study it in class, the Soviets are on the side of the Americans and the British. So we associate them with being, you know, I guess the quote unquote good guys. But in this situation, they're invading a sovereign country. What is it? 2 months after the start of the war in Poland. So, you know, what is that say about the Soviet Union during this time period? What does that tell us about, I guess, their motivations and everything else, you guys think?
You want to take that?
I think they're just trying to expand their territory and just trying to push through and gain more land, I guess. I think that it was, I don't really know. I think it's hard to say, but I think they were just trying to gain more territory, gain more land. And they thought that Finland was weak. They thought that they could just easily push through and just easily gain that territory like they did before. So
yeah, to add on to that, Stalin was very scared of the Nazi Germany. He was scared of fascists in general. Fascists and communists, as we talked about in class, are kind of like their natural enemies. So Stalin was feared that Germany and Finland would actually go into an alliance. Which actually this war caused Nazi Germany and Finland to go into an alliance after the war, but that's for after the war. So it was kind of a very bad decision on Stalin's part, kind of, I think, a decision made in paranoia about what could possibly happen.
Yeah, and you're also looking at a Russian army that is fresh off of a series of purges. So from a leadership standpoint, they're diminished. And I know, as you guys are going to talk about training, they were not prepared for the type of war that this would be. And I think a lot of people don't always think about that depending on the terrain war is fought on, it changes how it's fought. And this one is going to be very, very different than the wars that the Russians were prepared to fight, which I think were mostly associated with Central European powers. So, Colin, I know you're going to give us a little insight into how they fought.
So the Finns had the upper hand on the Russians, only because they were fighting a defensive war. So they were just going to let the Russians come in, you know, do what they had to do, and they were just going to defend. And it's extremely easy to defend in snowy territory. And both sides, the Finns and the Russians, were extremely well equipped for the cold. The only thing is that one side had camouflage and the other side did not. the Finns were really good at concealing themselves. They had great camouflage. They wore all white. The Russians did not until later on into the war. The Russia's Navy was very effective too due to the Baltic Fleet. And that's the other thing. Russia had a really great Navy at this time, and the Finns did not. The Finns' Navy and their Air Force was extremely small. The Finns Air Force only had 48 fighters, 34 reconnaissance planes, and 18 bombers, which is extremely small. Especially when you're fighting Russia. And so this was already bad. The Mannerheim is the leader of the Finnish army, and he and his soldiers are not well equipped against this huge Russian army that's about to push through. The Red Army tried to persuade its citizens to overthrow their government, just like Brody said before. And Stalin tried to make a puppet government with a puppet president. And basically, this president would give supplies to the Russian army to try to convince all the surrounding areas in Finland and its citizens that, like, look, your people are helping us. Let's not try to get into even more conflict than we already are in. Let's just hand over everything, and let's just get this over with.
So, yeah, and to kind of add on to what Colin said with the Navy especially, the Navy was, at this point, pretty much just a coastal guard of about 19,000 soldiers, not very prepared to fight an actual war. And then the Air Force, obviously, as Colin said, is also very ineffective. So that kind of leads us to the first major offensive in the war. So as I discussed earlier, the Karelian Isthmus, that's the borderlands between Russia and Finland, that is the first actual Russian push. That's where they push into sort of south of Finland, toward the southeast side of Finland. So this is where the Russians initially just kind of like plow through. This the Finnish strategy here is to kind of, they set up about four defensive units all like along the border, kind of like sort of inland. What the generals wanted to do, they wanted to kind of wait and allow Russia to push in and then possibly just set up defensive positions and hold. And like Colin was saying earlier, camouflage, stay in the snow, provides a natural cover, provides natural camouflage, and just hold out and wait. So on December 1st was the first time they actually kind of, the Russians made a big push, but the Finnish were able to not necessarily entirely push back this invasion, but it showed them that the Russians were not invincible. They were able, the sniper corps were doing great work. The ski troops were sort of taking care of them. The ski troops we'll get into in a bit. It showed the Finns that they could hold their own in this war. And then on December 23rd was where the Finns actually had their first victory. It was the city of Tolvajärvi. They killed about 4,000 Russians, and they held the city. Their strategy was actually to let them take a lot of land and not initially push back, because they knew if they pushed back immediately, they were just going to get overtaken by the Russians. So they allowed the Russians to take some of the land and then pushed back and were able to actually take back the city.
Yeah, and I find that interesting because that ends up being part of the Russian strategy against the Nazis in 1942 and 43, is to let the Nazis advance in areas, advance too far, and then counterattack and try and encircle or severely hinder the ability of the Nazi army to function. So a very similar strategy that the Soviets will use a couple of years later, which they probably got from this, which I think is kind of interesting. What about the ski troopers? Because that's something that's very unfamiliar for a lot of people.
Yeah, so the ski troopers were very interesting in this war. They were equipped with skis and okjas. And okjas are basically these sleighs, these rescue sleighs that they would use if, you know, a soldier got injured and whatnot. It's a lot easier to pull a man on a sleigh and get him out of there than just dragging him across the snow. So Finnish troops were really good at moving and covering ground really quickly. And this gave them a really good upper hand against the Red Army. The Red Army actually didn't have skis or ski troopers until a little bit later in the war. And whenever they did get skis and ski troopers, they trained them prior to being sent. They trained them in Siberia, and then they would send them off to the eastern border of Finland. Finnish ski troopers were also really stealthy. They would also, when covering ground, they would stop in certain areas that they have been in, and they would place like booby traps and stuff like that to keep basically the Red Army in a certain position so that they wouldn't be able to follow them. Most of the Finnish infantry were equipped with skis. However, there were specific ski divisions that were a lot more specialized than that. Ski troopers also had toe bindings, which would allow them to quickly
take off and put back on their skis in any situation. So if they had to fight, they would just quickly slip off the skis, fight, and then if they had to get out of there, quickly slip back on the skis and then just get out of there. So the Finns were not good at tank combat. They actually didn't have an armor division until World War II, and their anti-tank units were really, really bad. This is because the Finnish army is extremely not well equipped at all. They have very little anti-tank weapons. So whenever the Russians are pushing through with their tanks, they can't really do anything about it. And the Finns were trained to German principles. So they had the same ideals as Germans. And just like Brody said, the Russians were really scared of Finland and Germany coming to an alliance. And like I said before, the Finnish army was really trying to keep this a defensive war. They didn't want to push too far forward and, you know, give up basically everything. They'd rather suffer a little bit in the first half and then just hold their positions and take it from there. The Finns had no thought of going to a large-scale war with Russia. They never thought this was going to happen. They were extremely unprepared for it. And, you know, it was really surprising for them whenever Russia just came out of nowhere to attack.
So, as Colin was saying, the Finns were very unprepared for this war. But one of the things they did most effectively was the psychological aspect of the war. They scared Russians to death with the things that they were doing. You had snipers laying in the snow waiting to pick off one troop, which would send back an invasion, sent them back about an hour, like hours at a time, because of just the fear of, you know, your men being sniped and just picked off one by one in the snow and without being able to even see where it's coming from. And then you also, the Finns had a similar strategy to the Russians in when the Germans invaded Russia. With the scorched earth policy, they'd burn down their towns, make sure that the Russians could not live off the land. But then they also took it one step further. They'd place booby traps, which usually were often just mines and anti-tank mines, to just scare the Russians. Made the Russians not want to fight this war, made them not want to enter Finnish territory.
Yeah, and I think whenever you have a large power like Russia or the Nazis or any of these larger countries, the reality for a country like Finland is they can't win a war in a traditional sense. So they have to make this a war of attrition, and that's what they do, using snipers, mines, booby traps, all these things that you're talking about, and it makes it a snail's crawl operation for Russia, and then eventually Stalin will have to weigh the consequences of this. You know, how many soldiers is Finland actually worth? And that becomes the, you know, kind of the way small countries fight in the 20th century. You fight a war of attrition and you try and make it an expensive and violent war for your opposition. Even today in the Ukraine, we're seeing that. So I know you guys wanted to talk about a couple of the, or at least one of the major snipers. So let's hear his story.
So Simo Heha was a really famous Finnish sniper in the Winter War. He first joined the army when he was 17. He joined the Finnish Voluntary Civil Guard. And when he was at this really young age, he would go to like sniping competitions, just basically testing your accuracy, and he would win every single one of them. He had a multitude of awards just from these competitions that he would do. Later on, he would come to fight in the Winter War, and he's believed to have over 500 confirmed kills in the Winter War, which is an insane number just for a singular sniper. About half of those actually came from his sniper alone. He was also equipped with an SMG, and that also took half of his kills as well. He's believed to have the highest number of kills from a sniper in any major war in history. He was heavily used in Finnish propaganda. So whenever he would, one day he got a crazy amount of kills. It was something like 30 to 50, and the Finnish civilians used that in newspapers, posters, and was basically showing the Russians like, look, this is our guy. He's gonna mess y'all up, basically. So all of Heha's kills were accomplished in less than 100 days. So he's averaging about 5 kills per day. Obviously, he got sometimes more than that. Sometimes he got none. Sometimes he got a little less. And something interesting about Heha is that he really liked iron sights. He did not like telescope sights. He believed that using a telescope sight would reveal your position, not only because of the glare. He also believed that, but because of whenever you use a telescope sight, you have to lift your head up a little bit. And he believed that Russians could easily sight that. So he much rather use iron sights. Also, whenever he was sniping, he would stay in one position for days at a time, and he would cover himself in snow, and he would even put snow in his mouth to stop his hot breath from coming out. And obviously, when it's really cold like that, you can see your breath, and he did not want that to reveal his position. So on March 6, 1940, Heha was severely wounded in the war. He was shot in the face with an explosive bullet by a Russian soldier. And this took out his whole lower left jaw, and he was believed to be dead at first. So they just tossed him in a body pile, and they just kind of forgot about him until a commanding officer told a soldier in charge of the body piles. He was like, "We need to find this guy's body. He's a war hero. He's a war hero. Find his body. Take him out." They found his body. They took him out. They realized he was actually still alive, and he was still unconscious though, and his whole jaw was still gone. So they took him out, brought him to a hospital, got him fixed up, and his wounds would bring him to 26 surgeries, which is insane, especially for that time period. And of course, you know, now his face is disformed and all that sad stuff. And on April 1st, 2002, he died at the age of 96 back in Finland, of course. And yeah, this dude was an amazing sniper, and he was only 5'3", which made it even easier and even harder for Russians to spot him out, and even easier for himself to conceal his position.
So yeah, and Heha wasn't the only one of these snipers. Finland had thousands of these snipers just waiting in cover, just ready to pick off Russian troops. Like I was saying earlier, this adds to the psychological effect of the war, just makes them so scared. And then you think of Heha and his effect on the Finnish civilians and how they saw the war. They're hearing about his feats and him taking out Russians. This did great things for morale back in Finland, back in the actual where the fighting was occurring, made people lot more confident in the Finnish ability to fight. And as we'll see, like, as you can see, made a lot of the outside countries a lot more confident in Finland's ability to fight. By about late January, other nations were actually starting to take notice of a lot of these things that were happening in Finland and starting to assist, donating things like planes, supplies, just a lot of not actually entering into the war, but doing a lot of the things like similar to what America was doing with the British, just lending out supplies. So yeah, you'll see the Finnish morale and everything decrease a lot because of these things.
Again, it's interesting because the Russians are going to do very similar things using their own snipers at Stalingrad and Moscow and other places like that. And it helps increase morale, and you're right, it shows the Finns that they can keep fighting. But I know ultimately the Russian size was a little too much for the Finns in this. So what happened?
So yeah, by the end of the war, after about 5 months of fighting from November to March, the Finns were just completely, they were just beat, you know. A lot of their cities were taken, a lot of the land was taken. The Russians were past the Carolean Isthmus, which was that was a really big blow in the Finnish morale. So, and the fighting stayed the same for a lot of this time. It was just Russians plowing through cities, the Finnish trying to take them back. It was just very, it's very draining on the Finnish soldiers, Russian soldiers, and the Finnish civilians. So on March 13th, clear that the Soviets were too powerful and the Finnish surrendered. That's why this is sometimes called the 100 Days War. The war lasted about 103 days, I think it was. So the Finnish surrendered, but the Russians actually, in the final, like, 15 minutes of the war, before, like, at 10:45 a.m., the Russians did this. The ceasefire was supposed to be at 11 a.m. The Russians actually went in and opened up one last bombardment on Finnish civilians, and it killed, like, hundreds of Finnish civilians. And you think for the after effects of this war, how that affected the Finnish perspective, they... This kind of made them, this attack by the Russians was a attack of revenge. They were angry at the Finnish for just how they went about this war, taking out their civilians their soldiers one by one. So the Russians took revenge, and this makes the Finnish they're already angry clearly at the Russians, but this makes them have a lot more contempt for the Russians, and it will lead to the effects we'll see after the war during World War II.
So the aftermath of this war obviously leaves an extremely depressing feel for the Finns. They just lost this major war, and they feel defeated because they are. Finland had to give up the Karelian Isthmus, a great slice of Karelia, Hanko, as well as islands in the Gulf of Finland. So in this treaty, in the Moscow Peace Treaty, they had to give up a majority of their land, which, you know, if losing the war wasn't enough, just by surrendering, they had to give up already what they were fighting so hard for. And Finland is believed to have almost 25,000 killed and just under 44,000 injured. But the Russians, on the Russian side, almost 50,000 were killed and 160,000 were injured. And you just think of the scale. Obviously, Russia has a lot more troops. They have a bigger army. So most likely more of them are going to die. I believe for the Finns, this is a great loss for them just because their army was so small. But, I mean, the Finns look like, based on numbers, they should have won just by the amount of casualties they had on the Russians, the amount of people injured they had. 420,000 civilian Finns lost their homes, many civilians displaced, many of them killed, just like Brody touched on. And Finland eventually joined forces with the Nazis in the continuation war against Russia. Which is exactly what Russia was fearing, but at the end of the day, it happened. And this war, just like you said, Coach, you know, it causes Russia to reform their whole military and completely change their strategy in World War II and in upcoming wars that they have in terms of clothing, equipment, tactics, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and some people have argued that the performance of the Red Army in Poland and then in Finland really kind of accelerated Hitler's plans to invade Russia, because they didn't look very well. They did not look like they were led very well. You know, we talk about their bombing with an advantage in the air like that. They should have probably used that a little bit more, but in the winter months, it was a little harder to do. So I think it's an interesting event and a prelude to some much more worse things. And I think it's also interesting because you have two like gray sides here. You have a country that's eventually going to side with the Nazis, and you really can't blame them because they're getting invaded by the Russians or the communists in the USSR. And then you have the USSR, who are our allies at this point, but invading a country, as you said, to get land, which is the same reason why Japanese invaded places, the same reason why Germany invaded places. So very complicated event, but I think is really good to, I think, understand and to look at the war itself and how big it was. What was the book that you guys used for a lot of this?
So we used the book A Frozen Hell. It's by William R. Trotter. Very, very good book. Very thorough, very in detail. Goes through a lot of the before the war, during the war, and especially it really shows how after the war, this war led to the events in World War II that Finland, that happened in Finland, happened in the USSR and Russia. All of these events. It's a very, very good book. One of the only ones that we could find on the Winter War, but very, very thorough, and it's a great book if you want to go into more detail on this event.
Yeah. You guys have anything else you want to add before we wrap things up?
I think I would say that like you were saying, Coach, the most impressive thing, most interesting thing is how this war impacted the Russians' ability to fight in World War II. And how it made them rethink a lot of their military strategy. I think going into this, we kind of only were looking at the snipers, but there is so much more to this event that you don't really see on the surface until you start looking into it.
All right, guys. Well, very good job. This is Tigers by the Fire, episode 4, season 3. Talk to you later.